Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Last night was the debate of the Democratic candidates. There were 12 of them on stage. Steyer was there. This is the billionaire guy who started with the impeach Trump campaign a long time ago, running for president, I guess using his own money. He was there. Andrew Yang just continues to attract my attention because he's interesting. We're going to have some of the highlights. In fact, some of the highlights are being loaded into our system right now, so we'll have them on the air here very shortly. We've got a lot to talk about, and once again, we're going to try to have as much fun as we possibly can today. But I do want to get through some of the stuff in the debate last night. And we can talk to you about who do you think won? Did you bother watching? You know, some of these Democratic candidates are a little cuckoo. I mean, they're a little out there, and they're not going to win the nomination. And if some of these do, there's a group there that if they do win the nomination, any one of them in that group, they're not going to win the election. So, you know, the Democrats have yet to anoint a real star. You know, at first it was Joe Biden, and Joe Biden has slipped. And now in the polls, it's Elizabeth Warren, who is number one in the polls. And so she was pretty much the pinata last night at the debate. So we'll have some of the highlights. Some of the stuff was kind of interesting, and we'll get into that here in just a few minutes. But you know what? What was the most Googled thing? The most Googled thing in Google search last night during the debate was Ron Reagan's commercial promoting an atheist organization. It's the Freedom From Religion Foundation. Ron Reagan, the son of Ronald Reagan. He ends by saying, "I'm a lifelong atheist, and I'm not afraid of burning in hell." And, you know, I've seen this many times before, but it aired last night during the Democratic debate on CNN. And I guess a lot of people were shocked. I mean, is it that shocking that Ronald Reagan's son is an atheist? If you think about your beliefs compared to the beliefs of your parents, if you think about who you are and what you believe today compared to what your parents taught you politically or as far as religion is concerned, isn't it very common for kids to be different from their parents? So we'll talk about that. I'm going to try to find it. If we could find that PSA, we will find that PSA and play it for you. But yeah, it's very profound. And I think the line at the very end of it is what attracts a lot of attention. "I'm a lifelong atheist, not afraid of burning in hell." Anyway, I thought it was interesting that was the top Google search during the debate last night of the Democratic candidates. Also, later in the show, we talked yesterday to singer-songwriter Don McLean, who is the person behind the poetic masterpiece American Pie. And I thought it would be fun to go through some of the lyrics, some of the phrases, some of the lines in American Pie. And this was a highly charged political song. It was a song about politics. It was a song about society. In fact, Ian Hoke, our studio producer, who is, as you know, is an actor and a playwright himself, Ian Hoke just told me before going on the air that he listened to American Pie about 10 times yesterday, and he said that he'd heard it many, many times, but this was the first time that he really listened to the words. And he said at one point Ian, join us here on the air here for just a minute. Ian is a millennial, and so, you know, an elder millennial, okay? So he didn't grow up with American Pie like many of us did. I mean, American Pie actually came out just before I was actually getting into radio. I mean, that's how old that song is, because you know how old I am, and you know how long I've been doing this. So for something to have been released before I even got into radio, that's pretty remarkable. But we grew up with that song, and I remember, I don't know, I remember one of my first radio jobs was a part-time job on a Saturday, doing a shift on a Saturday. I used to drive to Mobile. I'll put this in the book one day. But I used to drive to Mobile and do a Saturday morning show from 6 to noon. And then I would drive back. And this was just my way of getting experience. I convinced somebody to hire me and put me on the air. And so I had to get some experience on the air before I could get on the air here. So I did that. And I remember analyzing that song, even at that point in my very young career, just starting out. I took American Pie and analyzed some of the lyrics and the relationship to a young generation. So the song has been interpreted by many. We're going to go through some of the interpretations of it later in the show, but also we're going to play some segments of American Pie, and I'm going to ask you if you think that they relate to today. Because as I said yesterday in my conversation with John McLean, American Pie, in a way, is like the Constitution or even the Bible. I'm not comparing American Pie to the Bible, but I'm comparing American Pie to the idea that the way the Constitution and the Bible were written, even though the specific references are different, they're relatable to us today. So we're going to talk about that a little bit later. But Ian, join me on the air here for just a moment. So you listen to the song about 10 times yesterday, and you'd heard it before, but this was the first time you really listened. So tell everybody what your reaction was.
Well, all right. So, you know, we played it a few cuts of it yesterday on the air, and when I was biking home, I thought, you know, I'm going to just go ahead and give this a listen and really pay attention to it without any distractions. So I listened to it once when I was biking home, and then I couldn't stop listening to it because every time I got through the whole nine-minute, you know, song, I just kept having these images pop up in my mind of, you know, I just found it so evocative. It made me think about what it must have been like to be a young person when JFK was assassinated. Yeah. It made me think of being a young person who was in high school when 9/11 happened. And it got me choked up. I was listening to it in the shower for the second or third time. And there are some of these lyrics, especially when the quartet is practicing in the park and they're singing dirges in the dark, the marching band refuses to yield. It made me think of moments where a great example is in Titanic, right? Remember at the end of Titanic when the band is out there playing all the beautiful music and then they know that the ship is going down and they kind of, well, this is it, fellas, and they kind of play this. And it's just the idea of continuing to make beautiful music and beautiful art in the face of this inescapable tragedy really caught me off guard, and I was really quite shook about it.
Did you find some aspects of the song that relate to today?
I thought so, yeah. I mean, maybe not like bleeding contemporary things. I kept coming back to 9/11 and just thinking, you know, what it was like when the country all kind of came together in that moment. And you could go, and it feels so good. Maybe after a mass shooting or a terrible accident, when people come together and have like a candlelight vigil, and you're around other people that are all feeling the same way, and you sing and you grieve together, and that's such a powerful thing for people to do. And there's moments in the songs where it seems like Don McLean is describing moments that are kind of like that, or his lyrics are evoking moments like that, and that's what really spoke to me.
And what really spoke to me in going over the song as I was preparing for the interview yesterday, I'd heard this song my entire career, heard it as a young person, heard it as an adult, familiar with so many of the lyrics, and I excuse me, I realized there was meaning there. But what really struck me was the idea of this is the day the music died. And while Don McLean was relating to the plane crash that killed Buddy Holly, the Big Bopper, and Richie Valens, as he went through the song, the day the music died seemed to relate to other moments in the life of a generation where they had lost their innocence.
That's right.
And it could have been the assassination of Kennedy.
Mm-hmm.
It could have been the death of John Lennon.
Yes.
The death of Kurt Cobain. Mm-hmm. I mean, Kurt Cobain was clearly, if you look at all the groups, and there were four really top groups that came out of Seattle that were on the leading edge of the grunge movement. If you picked one person who was the most symbolic of that whole movement, it was Kurt Cobain.
Mm-hmm.
And so when Kurt Cobain committed suicide, I thought this was just such a loss for an entire generation because they would not have the opportunity to watch him mature as they matured. Oh, we got a phone call. Okay, great. yeah, Mike's on right the other there. Room with Ian. So I thought the song was really interesting, and we'll talk more about that a little bit later. But so much imagery in it, and the king and queen and the gesture. There were conversations about that being about John F. Kennedy and his wife, the first lady, Jacqueline Kennedy. And the gesture was Lee Harvey Oswald. Mm-hmm. And that was another day the music died for a generation. So I think we'll spend some time in the final hour talking about this and analyzing the song, but also talking about those moments when you can say, well, you know, for me, whether it was part of a generation or you as an individual, this is the day the music died for me.
One final thought, and it made me curious to know, what's the next moment? What's going to be the next unifying tragedy or terrible loss that's going to bring us all together and define the moment for a generation? What's that going to be?
We don't know. But we know that it's inevitable that there will be one.
And when it happens, I'll be thinking about this too.
Yeah.
Yeah, and these lyrics.
All right. The Democrats debated last night. There was a question toward the very end. I mean, look, this was a three-hour ordeal. And I mean, I call it a three-hour ordeal because it was a three-hour ordeal. There was a question asked toward the end. Anderson Cooper asked this question about the scene of Ellen and George W. Bush sitting together in the suite at the Cowboys game. And some people criticized this as being a terrible question to even ask at the debate. And basically, Anderson Cooper was saying, all right, with the controversy over Ellen sitting next to George W. Bush, because she's a liberal and he's an ex-Republican president, do you have a friendship with somebody that would surprise us? And I thought that was a really important question. And you had Democrats talking about the people that they really politically disagree with, but they actually were friends with. So we'll talk about this. And I guess the main question here is, was that a fair question? Was that a legitimate question to ask? And I think in these times of great political divide and political tribalism, that it really is great for us to admit that, you know, yes, we are friends with people who we totally disagree with politically. If you want to join us with a comment, our number is 260-1870, and our text is 870-870. I'm Scoot. We'll be back on WWL. All right, here's a song that I think relates to much of what was said last night during the debate of the Democratic candidates. This song seems to fit what they were saying. Yeah, I mean, you can't give it away. I mean, seriously. Oh, by the way, happy birthday today to a bass player for Red Hot Chili Peppers. Flea is 57 years old. What mother would name their son Flea? What mother would name their son Scoot? Has a candidate's performance at a debate ever caused you to lose or gain support for a candidate? Have you ever been affected by somebody's performance at a debate? That's our WWL Blue Runner Gumbo poll question. Right now it's 50-50. 50% no, 50% yes. And you can give us your opinion by going to our website, WWL.com. Here's a text that says, too bad their three-hour ordeal didn't end up like Gilligan's Island, a three-hour tour. Could you imagine some of the 12 clowns stuck on the island together? One can only hope. Now, that would have been funny. Yeah, it was a three-hour debate. I mean, my God, it was 3 hours. That's a long time. And even though you're up there with if you're there, then you're up there with 11 other people, 12 people on the stage. That's a long time to be mentally on guard, to not knowing when you're going to have to respond to something that somebody says about you or a question. And it just, I don't know, it seemed like it was a very, very long time. So let me give you some highlights, especially for those of you who didn't bother watching. Let's bring you up to date on some of the things that were said. Bernie Sanders, this was his first public appearance since he had a heart attack, but he says that he's feeling great and even healthier now. He talked about Medicare, and here's Bernie Sanders trying to explain it again.
As somebody who wrote the damn bill, as I said, let's be clear. Under the Medicare for All bill that I wrote, premiums are gone. Copayments are gone. Deductibles are gone. all out-of-pocket expenses are gone. We're going to do better than the Canadians do, and that is what they have managed to do. At the end of the day, the overwhelming majority of people will save money on their health care bills. But I do think it is appropriate to acknowledge that taxes will go up.
Yeah, I mean, it all sounded really great up to that point. I mean, are the taxes going to go up less than the money that I spend for all of those things? I mean, if you cut out all of those things from deductions on my paycheck, I'd end up with a lot more money. Same thing with you. You'd end up with a lot more money. If raising the taxes was lower than that amount, then maybe it would be good. Elizabeth Warren spent some time talking about the health care needs and Big Pharm.
If we're going to talk seriously about breaking up big drug companies, we should ask if people are financing their campaigns by taking money from big drug executives.
And it was Klobuchar who called out Elizabeth Warren for not stating how much her health care plan is going to cost.
At least Bernie's being honest here and saying how he's going to pay for this and that taxes are going to go up. And I'm sorry, Elizabeth, but you have not said that. And I think we owe it to the American people to tell them where we're going to send the invoice.
And then there was this exchange between Biden and Warren, two of the, they are the two top leaders in the polls right now.
I agreed with the great job she did. And I went on the floor and got you votes. I got votes for that bill. I convinced people to vote for it. So let's get those things straight, too.
Senator Warren, do you want to respond?
I am deeply grateful to President Obama, who fought so hard to make sure that agency was passed into law. And I am deeply grateful to every single person who fought for it.
And all of these cuts are courtesy CNN. They were the host of the debate last night. Here's a text that says, Scoot, there were 13 candidates, not 12. Anderson Cooper was the 13th clown. I don't know about that. I mean, do you think he was acting like a candidate? There was a lot of criticism from the candidates themselves afterwards because they said they didn't get any questions about climate change. The climate crisis, there were no questions about that. Wouldn't you have thought that CNN, being a liberal-leaning cable news network, that would have been a key thing that they would have brought up, something that they would have wanted to know from each of the candidates, but that really didn't come up. If you want to join us with a comment, our number is 260-1870, and our text is 870-870. So what about this question that was asked toward the end? And again, this was not like the primary question. It was toward the end. And I think in these times of political tribalism and great political divide, I think it's a good question to ask somebody, okay, who are you friends with that you disagree with? And that was the question inspired by the controversy with Ellen sitting next to George W. Bush in the Jerry Jones suite at the Cowboys-Packers game a few weeks ago. And at one point, Ellen is laughing with George W. Bush, and Ellen received a lot of criticism from progressive liberals and from Democrats, a lot of criticism because she was sitting next to George W. Bush. I mean, like, how dare you, a liberal, gay, Hollywood personality, how dare you sit next to George W. Bush? But that's where we are today. That's the world that we live in. So that's why I thought it was a fair question. Do you? Was it fair to ask that? You know, we talked about this on the show the other day. In fact, I asked you, who is it that you totally disagree with politically, but you're friends with them? Maybe it's family. I mean, look, sometimes people have lost contact with a close family member because of politics. But some people love their family even if they disagree. And there are people in my family that I disagree with, and they certainly disagree with me. So I thought that was a really fair question, and we'll go through some of the responses of some of the candidates. But a couple of the Democrats mentioned that John McCain was somebody that they didn't always agree with politically, but they respected the guy, and they were really good friends with him. From Metairie, Chuck, you're on WWL. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Scoot. How you doing?
I'm good.
Hey, so there's this website called usdebtclock.org, which has an incredible amount of information on it. One thing that's just jumped out at me when I looked at it is that the top 1% of the people in this country own $55 trillion of the wealth. The bottom 50% have $1.7 trillion in debt. Now, if the top 1%, they could pay off the national debt of $22 trillion and still have more than half of their wealth intact. So that's the reason why I think the only viable candidate is Elizabeth Warren, because her goal is to, and it's got to be done because we're top heavy and we're getting ready to tumble. She's the only one that's ready to redistribute the wealth in this country through the tax system, and it can be done. If enough people push it, it can be done. I know the 55 trillion 1%ers aren't going to be happy with it, but what good is it going to be if this country tumbles? What good is all that money going to be to them?
You know, Chuck, this is one of the issues that is not one of those popular, sexy, marketable issues, but it is a very, very serious issue. And everybody keeps kicking this can down the road, not worrying about it, not because they don't really, it's like this country has not been held accountable for the debt that it's in. And it continues to get bigger all the time, and Republicans add to it, and Democrats add to it. And as much as Republicans want to say, well, we're not wasting taxpayers' dollars. Well, Republicans are. In many ways, they're wasting it too. But this is one of those issues that, you know, this has a big impact on our country, or will at some point soon. And yet nobody really wants to address it because the voters don't really care about it as an issue, because I guess they just don't understand it.
Well, it's the strength of this nation is now an upside down triangle, with all the poor and the people that are unable to do anything sitting at the bottom with nothing, and the very few are at the top with everything, and it's going to tumble.
Yeah.
We're already seeing it. I mean, there's unrest in this country, and it's only going to get worse. If people can't live, they can't survive. They can't survive on what they have. They have nothing to fall back on.
No, it's true, and it's almost as if anything stops, there are going to be so many people who are in trouble, and there even wealthy people are going to be in trouble if everything stopped at this point. And you were accountable for everything that you owe right now. And one of the things sometimes that big corporations do is, you know, they look like they're more profitable than they really are because they just keep moving forward and they never take care of the past. And look, man, I am not an accountant. I don't know that much about all that kind of stuff. And if you saw my checkbook, you would understand why I'm saying that. But I do know that this is a problem. But like many other real problems, it's not a problem that gets attention in the media because it's not one of those sexy topics. It's not a problem that voters care about. Therefore, you know, this is a great example of what I often talk about. The national debt is a huge technical problem for our country, and could come crumbling down on us. But the media doesn't push that as an issue, even though many in the media know that's an important issue. And the media doesn't push it because the voters don't care. The audience doesn't really care about that topic. If you had a chance to watch somebody talking about something like legalization of marijuana, which really the president can't do much about that. He or she can say that they're for it or against it, but they really can't do much about that. But voting for somebody because of how they feel about legalizing marijuana or the Second Amendment, which the president really can't do much about either. It's interesting that the president can't do anything about those things, but those are more interesting topics to voters than if somebody was really going on into a deep expose about the national debt. In fact, I probably just lost half the audience just even explaining that the national debt is not a very exciting topic. All right, if you want to join us with a comment this afternoon, our number is 260-1870, area code 504-260-1870, and our text is 870-870. Happy birthday today to guitarist Bob Weir of the Grateful Dead. Bob Weir, 72 years old today. I'm Scoot, and we're coming back. This is WWL. Yeah, I heard a lot about the promises that were made last night during the debate. A lot of promises that cannot be fulfilled. And I don't know when you and I are going to get smart enough to realize that every candidate, and this has nothing to do with political sides, every candidate makes promises just to get your vote, knowing they can't fulfill those promises. And we are reminded about that after every single election. And it's almost as if we still believe that they're going to do what they say they're going to do. Here's an update on our WWL Blue River Gumbo poll question. Has a candidate's performance during a debate ever caused you to lose or gain support for a candidate based on their performance? Did their performance cause you to gain or lose support for a candidate? 57% say, nope, never happened. 43% say, yes, it did. Give us your opinion by going to our website, WWL.com. From Baton Rouge, Glenn, thanks for calling our show. Welcome. Hello, Glenn. Okay, well, I'll check on Glenn, see if he is still there. Here is a text that says, if Warren gets elected, those one percenters will leave with their money. Yeah, I don't know. You know, I mentioned this briefly yesterday. There's so many people who say, you know, if so-and-so is elected, I'm going to leave the country. I don't know whether that's like this threat, that if you and I vote for this person, that this person's going to leave America. Because in most cases, it doesn't matter which side. In most cases, you and I are thinking, okay, move. So what? And a lot of them are celebrities with the money to move. In fact, they probably already have a house somewhere else. But, you know, go ahead. You want to leave the country? Go ahead and leave the country. But I'm not going to change my vote because you're threatening to leave the country. Here's a text that says, I'm not wealthy, but I do have an advanced degree, and why should I pay more than 32% federal tax and over 7% state tax? It's like I'm being punished. You know, look, I mean, I get that. And we do often see taxes as a punishment. You know, I just wish we all paid our fair share. And there are more ways for the wealthy to get out of paying more taxes than the average American citizens. So if you're just tuning in, I'm Scoot. We're doing some highlights from the debate of the Democratic candidates last night on CNN. And we'll continue with this through the show. And also, I want to add to the conversation next hour, the top Google search during the debate of the Democrats last night on CNN was Ron Reagan's commercial promoting an atheist organization. You think people were curious about the organization, or were they just outraged that the son of Ronald Reagan would proclaim that he is an atheist on television? This was a commercial that he did a couple of years ago, but it aired last night, and that was the top Google search. So we're going to try to find that and play that for you coming up in the next hour. Here is a comment that former Vice President Joe Biden made about income equality. This is from the debate on CNN last night.
There's $1,640,000,000,000 in tax loopholes. You can't justify a minimum $600 billion of that.
And Kamala Harris talked about the president selling out the American people.
He has consistently, since he won, been selling out the American people. He's been selling out working people. He's been selling out our values. He's been selling out national security. And on this issue with Ukraine, he has been selling out our democracy.
All right, if you want to join us with your comment this afternoon, our number is 260-1870, and our text is 870-870. From Mandeville, Steve, welcome to WWL.
Hey, how's it going, Scoot?
Good.
I bet you 50% of that 57% has never watched a debate.
Well, you know, you may be right about that. But you know, the other thing that I find intriguing, but also very, very frightening, is that I bet there are people who make decisions about who to vote for based on just watching a debate.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Yeah, my brother and I just had a long conversation about that today. Unfortunately, a majority, and this is a generalization, folks, I don't know this number to be exact, but I'll bet you a majority of people decide on sound bites and have never been to one of these candidates' websites to read their platform, have done no more research than what they saw in a commercial or...
That's right.
My brother-in-law wants to add, besides the R and the D, he wants I for indicted and U for unindicted.
Now, that's funny. That's good comedy. Steve, you know, the other thing that I thought about is, you know, people complain about negative campaign ads, and we talk about that a lot locally, and the two people running for governor now in the runoff, John Bel Edwards, the incumbent, and Eddie Rasponi, the Republican businessman, they're already out with negative ads. And as much as people complain about the negative ads, they must work.
They work. They work.
And doesn't it seem that if somebody says something negative about somebody, that is more memorable than if somebody says something positive about somebody?
Well, just like bad news sells good,
yes.
Doesn't.
Yep, exactly.
You know, man, you know, Scoot, if I hear something bad about you, I'm joyful. I want to hear that, man.
Something good, forget it.
You bought somebody a drink last night? Who cares?
Yeah, I mean, like, okay, yeah, okay, let's think about this, okay? Scoot went to 80s night, and he had a great time, and he got home safe. Compared to Scoot went to 80s night and walking home, he got hit by a motorcycle on Canal Street. Or I think that's one of the...
No.
I'm just giving the... Man, if that happens to me, if that happens to me again, that's on me.
Yeah, but, you know, that's exactly the truth. I don't want to hear the good things you did because you're already on that other side. You're the, you know, you're the R. Are you the... indicted or the unindicted, whatever, you know, you're on the other side from me. I don't want to hear good things about you. Tell me something bad, and I'll take that to the bank.
Yeah,
it's exactly why that's what sells on the media.
I'm glad you understand that, Steve, and I appreciate your call. All right, if you're on hold, hang on. If you want to join us with your comment, our number's 260-1870. It's area code 504-260-1870, and our text is 870-870. Here's a text that says, so Harris just admitted Trump won the election. Well, right now, I don't see a real star among the Democrats. Do you? And if you're a Trump supporter, I'm sure you want the least attractive candidate to win the nomination, so Trump would have a better chance of winning. But if the Democrats don't put together the right ticket, they're not going to beat Trump. Got a text here that says, Tulsi Gabbard definitely changed my focus. We need to be watching her. She's amazing. Yes, she is. That is the congresswoman from Hawaii who is a veteran. And she is sharp and hasn't gotten a lot of attention up to now. I'm Scoot. We'll be back on WWL. And today we wish a happy birthday to bass player C.F. Turner of Bachman Turner Overdrive. He's 76 years old. You know, if this song were released today, don't you think that the political correct police would come out and say, oh, you can't make fun of people who stutter? But, I mean, hey, it was done back then. Also, The Who had that song, My Generation, talking about my generation. People stuttered there, too. Here is a text that says, she's hot. Obviously, a reference to Congresswoman Tulsi Gabbard. Ian Hoke just told me in my headphones during the break, he says, she's the best candidate to come out of the Republican Party in a long time. I mean, she's a little bit on the moderate side. She really is sharp. There's a lot to like about her. And yes, she is, I'll say it, she's hot. Here's a text that says, Scoot, I went to the Joker as your recommendation. It was good. However, your laugh reminds me of the Joker's laugh. Any similarity between the character in Joker and me, strictly coincidental. From Denham Springs. Greg, you're on WWL. Hello, Greg. Hey, Greg. All right, not sure what happened to Greg. Let's go to Gonzalez. Tim, you're on WWL. Got time for a quick comment because I've got a code word coming up here.
Hey, Scoot, how you doing?
I'm good.
I just want to say, first of all, I'm an independent, and no matter who they put up there, we're still in the same situations with health care and this and that, and it's like nothing ever gets resolved. So it's getting to a point where what's the point of even voting anymore?
You know, I understand why you feel that way, and it is true. as different as they appear to be on the surface. What really changes? I mean, seriously, your life has not changed that much. Whether you love him or hate him, your life has not changed that much since Donald Trump became president. Now, I mean, obviously there are exceptions in every case, but for the most part, your life hasn't changed that much. Your life didn't change that much when Barack Obama was president. And I remember this, like, fear of this country's going to collapse was part of the reaction after Clinton was elected in 92. All right, it's time to give some cash away. I'm going to give you a chance to qualify to win $1,000 in the Nationwide Intercom National Cash Contest. The code word this hour is TROPICAL. Text TROPICAL. Text TROPICAL to 72881. We'll have another code word coming up right before the top of the hour news at 3 o'clock. We never charge for text, but individual plan text and data rates may apply. And we recommend that you please do not text and drive because it's just not safe. All right. Ron Reagan and his commercial for atheists, an atheist organization, got a lot of attention during the debate. We'll talk about that next hour on WWL.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.